to BrandonVaught.com, where today I have the great joy of interviewing Chris Haw. Now, I'm really excited about this interview because Chris has had a real impact on my life as a Christian, both as a Catholic and as an evangelical. When I was an evangelical college student about 5 years ago, I read through Chris's book called Jesus for President, which he co-authored with another radical evangelical named Shane Claiborne. I was really enchanted with both of these guys because, to me, they lived out the sort of radical, subversive call of the gospel to live in solidarity with the poor and the marginalized, and I really admired that and was intrigued. And so, when I learned just a few months ago that Chris had in fact converted to Catholicism fairly recently, I was very surprised, and even more so when I discovered that he recounted his whole journey in a new book called From Willow Creek to Sacred Heart, Rekindling My Love for Catholicism. The book is coming out in mid-October by Ave Maria Press, and I read an advanced copy, and so I asked Chris if he'd be willing to chat a little bit about the book and about his story. And so he's joining me today. So Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Welcome.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks, Brandon.
G.K. Chesterton once said that the church is like a house with hundreds of gates, and no two men enter at exactly the same angle. I think part of the reason why I'm captured by your particular story is that the angle that you entered the church is such a unique one. So you were born and baptized Catholic, but then in your teenage years, you got involved with Willow Creek Community Church, a big mega church outside of Chicago, and were heavily involved with the mega church movement that is overtaking much of American Christianity. But then from there, you moved into this radical new monastic movement, helping to spark it along with some of your friends. And then finally, you came full circle back to the Catholic Church. Can you cover maybe some of the main experiences and events that drew you back to the Catholic Church along this journey?
Well, what's kind of interesting is that it's almost like I came into a really deep faith and engagement with Jesus through Willow Creek. I mean, they really taught me so much of the gospel there, and they made me passionate to read the scriptures. But the more and more I got deep into that, the more and more I found myself wanting to do things that might not look exactly like Willow Creek. For example, I really felt compelled after hearing more and more about the gospel there to find my way into what Mother Teresa called finding your own Calcutta. And so for me, I had gone to Eastern University and I found that the nearby Calcutta was Camden, New Jersey. It seemed like a hellhole and there's tons of abandonment. I mean, it's virtually like zombie apocalypse here at times. And wanting to move in there, it was just, I don't know, some people would call it coincidence, some people would call it divine arrangement, that I ran into a Catholic priest at Eastern University who was speaking there. They don't have a lot of Catholics at Eastern because it's very like evangelical Baptist-y. And I was very into that. I was leading worship as an evangelical-styled guy. But in a way, I kind of thought, I'm a big enough person, I'm passionate enough to be able to move in to this city and partner with the Catholic Church. So in a way, I didn't like study my way into Catholicism. I didn't go in as some sort of Oxford C.S. Lewis kind of person who like studies out of atheism and into a tradition. It was more of like I was passionate, and the partner in the passion all of a sudden was going to be the Catholic Church. So it was like coming into something I had utterly written off. I was done with Catholicism. Being from Willow, I thought it's just a dying place to leave behind, and all of a sudden I go into the Mass. And the Mass, in a way, is really what profoundly touched me, because there was a different relationship between sincerity and liturgy, because in evangelical worship, everything had to be like squint your eyes and hold your hands up in the air kind of thing. But liturgy is more almost like at a deeper level, because the words, you can't pretend that they're coming out of your heart at first. They're already there. They're outside of you, and then they come in and shape you. So liturgy in the Mass, and particularly the Mass as it centered on a crucified and tortured Christ. I read Torture and Eucharist by William Kavanagh and made sense out of how profound it is that we have, at the center of Catholicism, we have a weekly celebration where we eat a victim. I mean, it is so mind-blowing to think about what we're doing. I mean, the word host for the bread they give you, host means victim. And so once I start, it's like I showed up into the Catholic Church almost on accident, in a sense. But then everything began to fill in the spaces the more and more I became compelled by the liturgy and the Mass. And I think one of the things that really clinched it is, as well, lastly, is that my big thing at Willow was feeling I was a mere Christian. I was non-denominational and that I could be neutral. But then all of a sudden I learned church history and I realized that non-denominationalism really was just Protestant evangelicalism trying to skirt the name for a while. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I experienced much of the same thing too, realizing that non-denominationalism was in fact a denomination. And so once you come to that realization, the question is, which tradition or which denomination is true? You know, and so you discovered that in Catholicism. You were drawn in by the truth of the Church and particularly her liturgy. But I want to focus one step back. Before you entered the Church, you kind of helped spark this new monastic movement among evangelicals, and it's caught on like wildfire. At its heart, it's basically a commitment to intentional community. Most of the people live together in houses, but also an intentional moving into those areas of the world on the periphery or on the margins of life. And so you ended up in Camden, but some of your friends like Shane Claiborne lives in Philadelphia in an intentional community, and Jonathan Wilson Hargrove, who lives in North Carolina in a similar manner. Can you talk a little bit about this new monasticism? What are its strengths? And as Catholics, how can we relate to it, and what benefits can we glean from it?
Yeah. Well, some of the strengths we actually gleaned from the Catholic Church. Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker is probably among the fountainheads of inspiration for this movement. Dorothy Day's managing to do something that had such a profound appearance of almost monastic charity and living amongst the poor, and yet people that weren't vowed into poverty, chastity, and obedience were just doing it like normal people. I think a lot of people have found that inspiring to say, I don't necessarily need to wait on being validated by some order necessarily to go and serve the poor and to serve Christ and to live with other people. I think there's something amazing and great about orders, but in a way, some people can be almost disempowered by officialness, that they feel like they need to wait on other people to do something. And so a lot of people in this new monasticism movement, I think, are realizing that I can go and form the kind of life that I've been wanting to form, and I don't have to ask permission from industrial modern capitalism and its lifestyle to give that to me. I'm going to go against the grain, I'm going to go against the stream and construct that. So, but what's very interesting is that, you know, a lot of these communities are all coming from different angles, like ecclesiologically even. Like our community walks across the street to a Catholic church. But there's some communities that are from a different, very different background, like the Bruderhof, who are from the Anabaptist Hutterite background, and they actually, you know, see themselves as a church. And so the more you have conversations about this, you realize there's things people have in common, there's things people are different on. And what we've tried to do is is find good anywhere where we can find it and glean from that truth. So even though I differ from the Hutterites in their views of church, I really think they are amongst some of the most significant and interesting purveyors of a lifestyle for people that are married, for lay people, as it were, and for people that aren't necessarily professional religious, like they hold normal jobs and businesses. So groups like the Anabaptists, the Dorothy Days, the Catholic Workers, and even a lot of communities in the United States that were pushing against the social segregation. The Koinonia Farms and Jubilee Partners have been people that have inspired a lot of us to realize that racism and segregation and class divisions are things that you can just go with the flow, or you can try to cut against the grain, you know, to go against the flow. And so for us, you know, we gathered together in a conference several years ago, and we wrote a book that came out of it called The 12 Marks of the New Monasticism. And for Catholics, I think one of the really hooks that they can hang their hat on is that one of the marks is that we submit to a church. And I don't just mean that because we need to throw in the word submission anytime we're Catholics. I mean it because it would be very easy for movements like this to continue proliferating division and proliferating a sense of everybody else is doing it wrong, I'm going to do it right, and I'm going to start some new church or start some kind of sense of sacramental division from what already is. And all of us, I think, in this movement, even if it's Baptists or Brethren or for us as Catholics, we all share a sense that we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want to continue on a sense of division. So to me, that's a really big connection point. A dozen other things could be said, but that's a start.
That's great, yeah. Now, your journey in this new monastic movement eventually led, as you mentioned, to you and your wife moving to Camden, New Jersey. Well, you kind of described it a little bit at the beginning, but basically by every measure, it's one of the toughest cities in the country. Very high crime rates, very high poverty rates. It's a really difficult and quite honestly scary place to live, I would think. A lot of young people like me are enchanted by this sort of radical commitment lifestyle that you and a lot of your friends have lived, that people like St. Francis and Dorothy Day have lived in their lives. But one thing that I think stops a lot of us, I know it does for me, is this fear, especially for those of us who have families. So I have a wife and young children. You have a wife and a young child now too. Talk to me a little bit about how do you reconcile this desire to live the simple, intentional life of gospel poverty with also this fear of moving into a dangerous area like Camden?
Well, that is the question. It's not easy. And in a way, I'm not sure if we have reconciled it. It's very difficult. I mean, we lived here for about 7 years before we even had our child. And there's a lot of things in the Christian tradition that prepare you to engage what is frightening. I mean, Jesus started it off by saying, if you try to save your life, you're going to lose it. And that's very challenging to hear that. But again, he follows up by saying, but if you give your life for my sake, you will find it. And the question always in every church is, so what does it mean to give your life to Christ? And, you know, there's, for every person, there's an interpretation. But for us here, there are times when we do feel afraid. This summer has been the worst, actually, because there have been more random murders than we've ever heard. And they're very gruesome and terrible murders that are often related to hallucinogenic drugs where people are out of control. And when you hear about that, that's different than just hearing about two drug dealers got in a fight and they shot one another. That's still very sad, tragic, and even still innocent people can get caught in that crossfire. And yet, we can like comprehend that violence in a way that we can't comprehend people that have murdered their own children because they were hallucinating, or attacked strangers because they just were on this drug called wet. That's very frightening, and we struggle with that question here always, and we don't know. You know, Stanley Hauerwas says something that's very provocative, and I'm not sure I like repeating it, because he says, you know, we often forget that the early Christian martyrs brought their children with them into the Colosseum.
What is that?
There's somebody yelling outside. And I'm not sure if I really like where Hauerwas is going with that, because it sounds, it's very big provocation, but it's like, so wait, what do we mean by that? Like, so we should always be taking our kids into dangerous places. What does that exactly mean? I've often been also wondering how Jesus says, you got to pick up your cross, but he also runs away from a stoning in Nazareth. Like, how is that tension resolved? If somebody says, well, it just wasn't his time, I mean, that feels like a cheap reconciliation to me. I kind of want to know, what does it mean to run one time, but then embrace the suffering another time? For example, the Christians, upon the destruction of Jerusalem in 70, they ran, all of them. None of them fought, and they just basically ran away. They didn't want to, like, jump into the middle of it as martyrs. They left. That's interesting. And I don't think I'm ready to promote any one line of this is how you engage a violent and terrible world. I mean, in some ways, you almost wonder if the proliferation of these orders that have poor, chaste, and obedient, i.e. childless orders to serve the poor, if that developed not for like even theological reasons at times, but partly for strategic reasons or familial reasons. Like I talked to a priest the other day who's like, I've loved being on some of my terrible dispatches, but I've been single and I'm happy that I was single there and I didn't have a family. So it's tough. But in some of these places too, part of the mission, and Anabaptists know this especially, part of the gospel's mission is having families that bless the world and not just individual people. There's something about families that are a very healing part of the process.
That's great. And I'd really encourage viewers to check out your book, because you do go a lot into kind of this, the grittiness, the darkness, the kind of despair that haunts a place like this with so much violence, so much poverty, so much fear. And I think you provide some, not quite an answer, but a good reconciliation of how to balance the fear with also the call to go into those places. Let's finish with a more lighthearted and maybe simpler question. Now that you've come back to the Catholic Church and you've fallen back into this great communion of saints, who would you say is your favorite saint and why?
That's a great question. I mean, I've partly been trying to canonize in my own little quorum, Chesterton. But as of yet, he's not canonized. I don't know of any miracles that have happened for him. It'd be funny to hear of some. And St. Francis is sort of like the cheap and easy one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Everybody can go to him as their obvious saint of inspiration. But, you know, actually, I'm pulling this out of the air right now because I just had an experience recently where I went to a church one time and I came across a statue of St. Joseph. And I think I'm going to maybe have to go for that. I actually fell before his statue and kneeled and wept for like 15 minutes, which that's not part of my custom to do. I don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
And at least not regularly. But there's, it's partly related to, I was asked by a great artist named Brother Mickey McGrath, a Salesian brother, to contribute to his book on St. Joseph. He does paintings of Joseph as a father and as a carpenter, etc. And he asked me to write a chapter on being a carpenter and a father. And I love that. And so I think there's something beautiful about Joseph in that he is a worker, and he has that relationship that ultimately I think all parents have to come to, which is that while your child is yours, your child is ultimately not yours. Your child is God's, which the implications of that are huge. Yeah, and he also had to kind of live through the suffering of his child, and through the growth of his child, and seeing him become somebody he might have never imagined. So I think I'm going to give a big vote for Joseph. I mean, you might have to come back on me later, but I'm going big on him.
There you go. Yeah, great. Now, again, Chris, you know, thanks so much for talking with me. As I mentioned, I really think a lot of you, and you've had a big impact on me, and so I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. Where online can people find out more about you and your work?
Right. Well, I just am going to be putting up a website this week, chris-haw.com. Some guy took chris-haw.com, so the dash in there. And I very infrequently blog, and I very infrequently use Facebook. It's just, I just don't do it much. But when I do, I usually, you know, contribute something of worth, I think. So, but yeah, find me on the web there, and I can always be responding to emails. And, you know, my book is going to be on the shelves in a few weeks, and I'm always happy to interact with folks and be in touch.
Thank you. And again, check out Chris's new book, which is called From Willow Creek to Sacred Heart, Rekindling My Love for Catholicism. And it comes out in mid-October from Ave Maria Press. And I really recommend it. I think Chris is sort of a pioneer in this kind of movement from evangelicalism to Catholicism, and taking a very unique route that reminds me a lot of people like Dorothy Day and Thomas Merton and St. Francis. And so check out the book, From Willow Creek to Sacred Heart. And for more interviews, articles, book reviews, and more, check out my website, which is at brandonvaught.com. Thank you.